I am glad that I see that some have decided to do as was requested this morning, and in keeping with the title of the sermon tonight, have decided to keep God in their plans. It is always good when brethren keep God in their plans, and it is always saddening when some do not. As you might have figured, our text this evening will be James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17, as this is the passage that most definitely speaks about keeping God in our plans. And as James was directed to write this to the strangers that were scattered, in this particular location within the book of James, we see, "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city, and continue there a year, and buy and sell, and get gain, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live, and do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good, and doeth it not, to him it is sin." Who doesn't make plans? I think we all do, at least to some degree. Some don't have a 10-year plan or a 5-year plan. But surely for some aspect of our lives, we make plans to some degree. I remember the first time that I was approached and somebody said, "What is your 5-year plan in the company?" I said, "Well, my first plan is to have a job at the end of the week and get a paycheck, and then continue that successively for a number of weeks." And the truth of the matter is, I've never thought about a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. They said, "Well, it's important to do so if you plan to have a career." But despite our best efforts, sometimes our plans do not work out exactly as we desire. And we've all had situations in our lives, and I know how it is when we have an upcoming situation or an upcoming event in our lives, we will conjure up in our minds exactly how everything's going to go. And no matter how hard we try, they go awry. Robert Burns, the famed Scottish poet, recognized this plight of man and once wrote, "The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry." They're a very well-known saying, but it's something that affects all of humanity. Others have realized this aspect of our lives, and one unknown person, knowing that we don't know our future, but God does, wrote the words, "Write your plans in pencil, but give God the eraser." Think about that. We might very well make plans, but is this what God has planned for us? I'm not saying that God has a plan and he has lined out our lives for us, but sometimes the things that we plan are not the things that God would have us do. James 4, 13 and 14, and the first part of 14, part of which we read in our text, it also points out the need to keep God in our lives. Said, "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we'll go to such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain." And the point is, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. But that doesn't mean planning is wrong. That doesn't mean planning is improper. Matter of fact, per Proverbs chapter 6 and verses 6 through 11, planning is good when it is done in consulting with God. We've read this passage here recently relative to another point, but the writer of the Proverbs there wrote, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man." These animals, this ant that he's talking about, made preparation. He made plans. And of course he did so in accordance to how God created him. And so should we keep God in our plans? Well, let's consider for a moment the self-deceit of self-sufficiency. We all like to think we've got things under control. I've got this. Do we? The words "go to now" in our text indicates the need to redirect our attention. Eyes on me, everybody. See what I just did? I called your attention to look on me. This is what James was writing as the Spirit directed him as he wrote to those people. They needed to redirect their attention to make sure that they kept God in their plans. God has never said, don't make plans. Don't have aspirations. But he has always indicated that man should look to him. Who were these people trusting? Why, they were trusting themselves. I'm going to go to a city. I'm going to buy and sell. I'm going to get gain. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to build new barns and put all my stuff in the barns. What happened to that fellow? That very night, God said to him, thou fool. The Bible repeatedly warns against feeling self-sufficient. It is not in man that walketh to direct his steps, we are told. But let's look even further back than that. God warned Israel in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 15 through 18. Can you imagine Israel coming through the wilderness, enduring the 40 years of wandering, which should have been just several days or several weeks trip, and then saying, we made it. Look what we did. Notice the questions that are asked of Israel in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 15 and following. Who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water? Who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint? Who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, and that he might prove thee to do thee good at thy latter end? And thou say in thine heart, my power and the might of mine hand hath gotten me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day. Israel benefited greatly because of the promise of God. The promise of God to his faithful servant Abraham. And as a result, Israel benefited greatly. They, in and of and by themselves, did nothing but being led through the wilderness. And the reason that it took so long for them to get to where they were is because they started out their journey in sin. Just as soon as they had been delivered from the Pharaoh and from his armies, and the water had collapsed back in upon Pharaoh and his armies, just as soon as Moses was out of their sight, they began to sin. They thought they were self-sufficient. In Daniel chapter 4, verses 30 through 33, we see that Nebuchadnezzar fell into this folly. We see that it's not just God's people who fall into this, thinking, I've got this covered. I've got everything under control. And we talked this morning about being confident in your salvation. There are many people in the world today that are confident in their salvation, yet they fail to keep God in their plans. In Daniel chapter 4, beginning in verse 30, the king spake and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? Oh, how wonderful he thought he was. But verse 31 says, while the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, thy kingdom is departed from thee. And they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. Nebuchadnezzar was allowed to rule. It was not by his own might or his own power that he was able to sustain that kingdom. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men, and he did eat grass as the oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. You know, it's interesting that Nebuchadnezzar did indeed sit upon that throne again. But when was it? When he finally realized that he had to keep God in his plans, that God was the one who gave him the power that he had. What does any of us have that we did not receive? I often bring up things that I see in movies or commercials and that sort of thing. And there's a movie called Shenandoah. And in that movie, there's a man and he has, I don't know, half a dozen sons and a daughter. And at the beginning and several times throughout, he sets the family down and they have the meal. And at the beginning of the meal, nobody's allowed to eat, nobody's allowed to touch the food until he prays. But the prayer that he prays is, it shows his idea of self-sufficiency. Say we have all these things by the sweat of our brow. Did we harvest? Did we clear the stumps? Did we make the fields? Did we plow? And we put all this and we have it and we did it all by ourselves. Nobody's help, but we thank you just the same. What do we have that we did not receive? In 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 7, we see that the Corinthians were being admonished because of their reaction regarding various things that they had. Now, during that time, we know that there were spiritual gifts, and not everybody received the same spiritual gift. And the Apostle Paul was directed to write, "For who maketh thee to differ from another? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hast not received it?" You know, some to whom the Spirit had James write, as we read in our text, obviously felt that they were captains of their own ship. They were the ones who would decide their destiny. And up to a certain point, that is true. But we have to decide based upon what God has given us. And will we do what God has commanded for us to do? And it's important because life is brief and life is uncertain. Another thing that I do occasionally, I will browse the obituaries. And Brother Brandon used to say, what are you looking for, to see if your name is there? No, it's not that if my name is there, but sometimes you find out things about people that you know that you otherwise would not find out. In other words, that they've passed on. Maybe you want to send your condolences to the family. But one of the things that I've noticed as you look at obituaries, that not everybody's in their 90s. Oh, how sad it is. Picture of a sweet child barely entered into life has departed. Or the teenager who was in a horrible accident or had some dreaded disease. Life is extremely brief and it's extremely uncertain. As you look at Job chapter 7, verses 6 and 7, you'll see that Job often spoke of life's brevity. He understood that even though he himself was still alive, he had witnessed death. His children had been taken when the house fell. His substance had been removed from him. And so he understood also the uncertainty of life. He said, "My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle, and are spent without hope." This is said during the midst of his tribulation that he suffered for being faithful to God, for knowing what God would do, even to the point when his wife said, "Just give it up, just curse God and die." He said, "Oh, remember that my life is wind, mine eye shall no more see good." As we look over a little further in Job chapter 9, we see a passage that when you read it, you might wonder what this is. Recently, we had this passage in one of our Bible quizzes. And somebody questioned, I didn't understand what that meant. "Now my days are swifter than a post." You know what a post is, don't you? You know, you put it in the ground and you put chain or barbed wire across it. No, that's not what he's talking about at all. He's talking about one that drove real fast from one place to another to give information, or one who ran from one place to another to provide information or to pass on word of things. My days are swifter than a post. They're brief. They flee away. They see no good. They are passed away as the swift ships, as the eagle that hasteth to the prey. He was very well aware of the brevity of life. He was also aware of the uncertainty of life. And the words that we have penned in Job chapter 14, verses 1 and 2, remind us of this. Once again, as we think about those obituaries, and it's interesting to see these people who live long, sometimes productive and profitable lives. It is encouraging when you see that one who has lived a very, very long life, had family and perhaps some success in this world, and they reach the ripe old age of 100 or plus, you think, wow, they had all that time given to them. It's equally sad when you consider the fact that with all that time, they didn't take advantage of it. Not where it really matters. But notice what Job was told to what Job said there and what Moses was told to write. Man that is born of woman is of few days and full of trouble. He cometh forth like a flower, is cut down. He fleeth also as a shadow and continueth not. Well, how can you say that someone has lived a long, full, productive, and profitable life and they're a few days? When you consider the span of one man's life, even the man who lived longer than everyone, Methuselah, and consider that in comparison to all of the time, the 6,000 plus years, science notwithstanding, that man has been on this earth, and it pales in comparison. Our days are swift. They do flow by quickly. We are living lives that are full of trouble. We do come forth like a flower. We are cut down, and we continue not. Life is also uncertain. In Luke chapter 12, verse 16 through 21, and we see Jesus speaking of the uncertainty of life. This was the man who thought himself to be secure, thought that everything that he needed was provided for him, that he had worked and labored so very hard. And this was Jesus speaking. And he was speaking a parable to them so that they would understand that we're not to trust in uncertain riches, the things of this life, but we're to trust in God. We're to keep our plans with God in mind. And as Jesus spoke, he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. It is obvious that he had already labored, that he had already stored up for the future. But then he realized that his harvest was so plenteous as time went on that he had no place for the new bounty which was given to him. And so I'll tear down these barns and I will store these fruits and I will store these things, my goods. And there's nothing wrong with that because somebody's going to be able to use them. Somebody's going to benefit from that. Matter of fact, if we amass a fortune and then we die, somebody is going to have access to that fortune. And that's not the problem. But look in verse 19. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. I'm going to work hard as I can for 30 or 40 years. I'm going to amass all that I can, and then I'm going to live life, and I'm going to enjoy it. But there's a problem with that. If we leave God out of our plans. He never consulted with God. He never considered God. I'm going to take my ease. I'm going to eat. I'm going to drink. I'm going to be merry. I'm going to enjoy life. But God said to him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Notice the question. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Because life is uncertain, it is important that we keep God in our plans. Matter of fact, God should be at the very center of our plan, because God is the giver of life. Human pursuits are as uncertain as life itself. You ever heard the expression, easy come, easy go? It's hard for me to grasp that, because very little that I have or have been able to do has come easy. It seems like some people have the Midas touch. Everything they touch turns to gold. Every endeavor that they have is successful. And then they just seems to just everything fall out just like it should for them. But these human pursuits can go away quickly. In Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 5, we find, even back in the Old Testament, before things were as they are today, and people still desired to have the things of this world, and a warning was given. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? Well, it is. But notice what he's talking about. For riches certainly make themselves wings, then they fly away as an eagle toward heaven. You know, as easy or as quickly as they come, they can go. We can lose whatever it is that we have amassed while here on the earth, whatever we are laboring for. Oftentimes people lament the fact that their parents are not able to leave them anything. Some people have the benefit of saying, and really meaning it, the things that our parents left us, nobody can take from us. It's not material goods. It's a knowledge of the truth and an understanding of the Word of God. Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 24, also another passage that tells us that riches only last the path that our life is on. They only last while we're here in the flesh. It says, for riches are not forever, and doth the crown endure to every generation? Stop and think about it. If you are elevated to become the king of the United States, I know we don't have one, never should, but if indeed you were, does that guarantee that it will pass down from generation to generation to generation? Stop and think about it. England has a queen. She's the longest reigning monarch in English history. But do you know that her family hasn't always held the crown? That's the very thing that was pointed out there in Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 24. And then Ecclesiastes chapter 9 verses 11 through 12, we see the same thing. Life is uncertain. Human pursuits are uncertain. The things of life will pass away, just as we will pass away. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. Yet neither bread to the wise, nor riches to the men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill. But time and chance happeneth to them all. In other words, we're all going to face death. We're all going to experience life, and things are going to happen. Verse 12 says, for man also knoweth not his time as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and the birds that are caught up in the snare. So are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them. The ones that he's talking about are the ones that fail to keep God in their plans. Now, time and chance happeneth to them all. That includes us as well, doesn't it? But think about the difference between one who keeps God at the center of their plans and the one who does not. Friends, the difference is eternity apart. We know this continued on into the New Testament. As in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 17. The Apostle Paul was writing to Timothy. He was dealing with the young preacher who would be preaching in a number of different places, who would perhaps be involved with a number of different social levels. And notice what he was told there. Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded. I'm told that people are oftentimes reminded of the golden rule. But I don't think the golden rule that they're thinking of is the one that the Bible teaches of. Their idea is the one that who has the gold rules. That's not the Bible golden rule. But charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded. That doesn't elevate them to any special status. Notice also, not only are they not to be high-minded, they're not to trust in uncertain riches. These riches can fly away. We've already seen this. They can be taken away. So what are they to trust in? But in the living God who giveth richly all things to enjoy. Keeping God in our plans. In James chapter 1 and verse 9 through 11, we see that there's a contrast between the humble man and the rich man. And as James is writing to them, he is doing so that they would not trust in uncertain riches, but they would keep God in their plan. They would trust in God and in his word and follow him. He says, let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted. He's going to be lifted up. He is humble before God. He's striving to serve God. But the rich in that he is made low. That rich, even though he may be rich according to the world's standard, he himself must humble himself. Because as the flower of the grass, he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth. And the grace of the fashion of it perisheth, so also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. If they trust in uncertain riches and do not keep God in their plans, while they're worth nothing more than the grass, it's going to fade away. It's going to be withered with the heat. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 24 and 25. Kind of goes right along with James chapter 1, verse 9 through 11, because he talks about the grass. And as Peter is directed to write in that general epistle, the first of which bears his name, for all flesh is as grass, and all the glory of men as the flower of the grass. What happens to them? The grass withereth, and the flower thereof falleth away. But notice why it is that we should keep God in our plans. For the word of the Lord endureth forever. And this is the word which by the gospel is preached unto you. Friends, we cannot allow ourselves to be self-deceived in that we are self-sufficient. We must continually be aware of the brevity and the uncertainty of life. But at the same time, we must rely upon the reality of dependence in God. Let's go back to Israel for a minute. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 18. Israel forgot the source of their blessings. They forgot who it was that led them by the hand out of Egyptian bondage into freedom, led them to the promised land as was promised, a land flowing with milk and honey. A land where they could be prosperous. A land where, as God had promised, he would send his son and the church would be established. But in Deuteronomy 8 and verse 18, but thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day. He brought them in dire circumstances out of a land of oppression, and brought them to a place where that covenant could be put in place, and where it could be carried out, and where it could be fulfilled. And it was God's doing. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, beginning in verse 9, we'll see this story of Israel. We read in that particular location, for the Lord's portion is his people. Jacob is the lot of his inheritance. He found him in a desert land and in the waste howling wilderness. He led him about, he instructed him. He kept him as the apple of his eye, and as the eagle stirreth her nest, fluttereth over her young, spreadeth abroad her wings, taketh them, bearing them on her wings. So the Lord alone did lead him, and there was no strange God with him. As long as they were looking to God, they would not entertain the idea of these strange gods. He made him ride on the high places of the earth that he might eat the increases of the field. He made him to suck honey out of the rock and oil out of a flinty rock, butter of kine and milk of sheep, with the fat of lambs and rams and the bread of breed of Bashan, and goats with the fat of kidneys of wheat, and thou didst drink the pure blood of the grape. But Jeshurun waxed fat and kicked. Thou art waxen fat, thou art grown thick, thou art covered with fatness. Then he forsook God which made him, and lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation. Oh, just as soon as things got good, Israel said, Lord, we got this. We don't need you in our plans. We want to do how we want to do. Matter of fact, isn't that why Israel ended up with a king? They want to be like the nations around them. I think that today, sometimes the church falls into this trap. They want to be like the churches around them. The only way they can do that is not keep God in their plans. We know this because in Psalms 127, verses 1 and 2, that God is the one who built the house. The Lord built the house. There are many who try to build religious organizations, religious situations, and some have done so. Oftentimes when we're driving to services, I will comment about some of the things that are going on at some of these places, and we pass a number of buildings on our way to this building, and I'll say, well, can you believe they're doing that? Linda says, they can do what they want to. It belongs to them. And that's a good point. That's not God's house. Psalms 127 in verses 1 and 2 says, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. It's important to understand that all of their labor and all of their effort, they're not keeping God in their plans. They're keeping themselves in their plans and what they want to do. They're keeping themselves happy, because they are doing what they want to do. As we continue reading the passage, except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. It is vain to rise up early, to set up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sheep. God is the one who built the church. Jesus Christ purchased it with his own blood. Jesus Christ sent the Comforter as promised. Even in the Old Testament. Ezekiel chapter 16, verses 10 through 15. We see the figurative language showing the glory that Israel had. And we see what it caused among them. Oftentimes when we fail to keep God in our plans, we begin to think that we ourselves are able to do all of these things, that we have accomplished all of these things, that we don't need God. And there in Ezekiel chapter 16, verses 10, beginning, I clothed thee also with broidered work and shod thee with badger skin. I girded thee about with fine linen. I covered thee with silk. I decked thee also with ornaments. I put bracelets upon thy hand and a chain upon thy neck. And I put a jewel in thy forehead and earrings in thine ears and a beautiful crown upon thine head. Thus wast thou decked with gold and silver, and thy raiment was of fine linen and silk and broidered work. These are things that show how beautifully adorned that Israel was. Thou didst eat fine flour and honey and oil. They weren't out there foraging. They were being provided for by God. The same thing was true as they were in the wilderness. God provided for them. Somebody might say, well, you know what? They had to go out and gather up the manna, didn't they? Well, of course, it was right outside their door. Wasn't a lot of work there. Thou wast exceeding beautiful, and thou didst prosper into a kingdom. Stop and think about it. The 75 souls went into Egypt because of the famine. The Egyptians brought them into bondage, and they came out a great nation, and God provided for them. But notice to what level he provided for them. In verse 14, Ezekiel chapter 16, and thy renown went forth among the heathen for thy beauty, for it was perfect through thy comeliness, which I had put upon thee, saith the Lord God. Ah, but we see the fail in verse 15. But thou didst trust in thine own beauty, and playedst the harlot because of thy renown, and pourest out thy fornication on every one that passed by. His it was. Oh, the demise of man when God is not kept in the plan. In Acts chapter 17, verses 24 through 28, we see that the Spirit had the Apostle Paul masterfully educate the philosophers on Mars Hill. It's amazing to me, these ones who are philosophers have always been thought to be the wise man, the smart, the intellectual, those who had much learning. But in Acts chapter 17, we see that Paul was directed to tell them about the source of life, the source of all things, so that they would know that there was a God in heaven, that there was someone that they were to look to, someone that they were to keep in their plans. He says, God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with man's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. And here's the point. Verse 26, and hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times therefore appointed, and the bonds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. Friends, it is God that gives life. It is God that provides life. The Spirit had James in James chapter 4, verses 15 and 16, remind his readers of their dependence of God and the need to humbly confess that need. He said to them, for that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this and that. But now you rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. What are we to conclude from this? First and foremost, there is nothing wrong with making plans and pursuing them. I suspect that each one of us have some sort of plan. Oh, it might be to go over and see the daughter and the son and the grandchildren and the this and that. It might be to seek other employment. It might be, who knows? We all have things that we need to address and take care of, and there's nothing wrong with this. But we must understand that making these plans without considering God's will is evil. It's arrogant. It's boastful. And because of that, it is sinful. Again, James chapter 4. This time verses 16 and 17. But now you rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. And verse 17. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good, and doeth it not, to him it is sin. We know that it is good to keep God in our plans. If we don't do it, we have sinned. One of the best ways to keep God in your plans is to put yourself in God's plan. Obey God's plan. Know what he has said to do for a person to become his child, and then live faithfully unto death. We know the gospel plan of salvation is very simple, and it's been around for nearly 2,000 years now. Want us to hear the word of God, Romans 10:17. Believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, John 3:16. Repenting of sins, Luke 13:3 and 5. Confessing before men that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, Romans 10:9 and 10. And then being baptized into Christ, just like those folks on the day of Pentecost, Acts chapter 2 and verse 38. And having done these things, then from that point forward, to remain faithful unto death, because you cannot remain faithful unto death unless God is in your plans. Perhaps you've here and you've not done that. You need to. We're going to give you the opportunity here in just a minute. You cannot just drift through life. You cannot just say, well, however it works out, because it will not work out in your favor. You must keep God in your plans. But perhaps you're here and you've heard these things, you've done these things, you've obeyed the gospel, and yeah, for a little while you kept God in your plans. But then you begin not to. To him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. What then? Well, God must be in your plan. And God's plan says that one is to return to him in repentance and prayer. As we stand and sing the selected hymn, we ask you, if you need to respond to the invitation, won't you come? Let us stand and let us sing.